guys, it's Andy's Girls. I absolutely have recorded this only one time. Just kidding. Six times, I think, for this intro. Continuing to kill the game. So I am out of the clawfish, spending some time away with my family this weekend after my dad unfortunately passed away this past Sunday, as mentioned on that episode entitled Charred. But the pod, of course, goes on. Course goes on. Course goes on. I mean, there's a course. Something's coursing. I'm so thankful. What's happening? I'm so thankful to some Bravo pals who are stepping in to guest host some incredible, incredible episodes. These episodes are inspired by a fave New York magazine series that I was obsessed with called I Can't Stop Thinking About. Today's episode is hosted by the literal queen, Lauren Ashley Smith, one of the hosts of Radio Andy's hit show, The Smith Sisters, an accomplished multi-hyphenate writer and showrunner, and of course, a Bravoholic. She can't stop thinking about the impact of millennial housewives, so I'm turning over the Clawfish microphone to her. Here we go, Lauren.
Hi, Andy's girls. I'm Lauren Ashley Smith, filling in for Auntie Sarah, my queen, the dame. And I'm here because I want to talk to you about something really important, which I'll get into in a second, something that's been weighing heavily on my spirit for probably years at this point in the Bravoverse. And I want to get into it. But first, I want to share with you what gives me the right to be on this mic. Like, girl, who are you? Why are you here on this esteemed program where it is an honor and a pleasure to be on this mic? Let me tell you, I'm Lauren. I am above all a big sister, and a big part of that is being a Smith sister. I am one third of the Smith Sisters, co-host of Smith Sisters Live, which is on Radio Andy, which is Andy Cohen's radio channel on Sirius XM, channel 102. We're on every morning, weekdays, from at 6 a.m. Pacific and 9 a.m. Eastern for an hour, talking about all things pop culture. It tends to be a lot of Bravo. So that's one thing. The second thing is that I worked at Watch What Happens Live for probably, I would say, a cumulative total of about 2 years. At first, I like was filling in, and then I joined permanently. And I think that was about a year and a half. Sorry, I'm putting on some Laneige lip sleeping mask because my lips felt a little dry. Sorry about that. Hate mouth sounds. I'll try to keep that to a minimum. Anyway, so I worked on Watch What Happens Live and was a producer on that show. And I loved it. It was just the best job ever. And when I got the job, I was not, I'll admit, like, I wasn't a Bravo viewer. What I was a Real Housewives of Atlanta viewer, because prior to working on Watch What Happens Live, I was a producer on a show on Bravo called Fashion Queens, which starred Bebby Smith, Miss Lawrence, and Derek J. And Lawrence and Derek were at the time on, they were in the Real Housewives of Atlanta universe. And since the show was about like fashion, we would start every episode by dissecting a look from the Real Housewives of Atlanta, because we aired pretty much right after Atlanta, I think, on Sunday nights. And so because of that, I watched Atlanta. I started watching it when I got the job. And that was my first Housewives franchise. Then when I got to Watch What Happens Live, I was like, okay, I need to do my research. I need to become fluent in the language of Bravo. So I basically dropped everything, like reading books, gone. Hanging out with my friends, sorry. And I watched pretty much every Bravo show from the beginning. I will admit, just a big caveat, especially as we get into what we're going to talk about, I don't watch New Jersey. I just felt like that was really too overwhelming to get into. So I have watched it. I'm pretty aware of what goes on in Franklin Village, or is it Franklin Lake? Sorry, Franklin Village is in LA. I live in LA. But I don't watch it. And I am not a like dyed-in-the-wool OC watcher, but I do. Again, I keep up with what's going on. But every other show, I'm talking Vanderpump, Beverly Hills, New York City, Potomac, Atlanta, Southern Charm, You're Below Decks, all of it, day one, Ultimate Girl Strips, day one watcher, Crappy Lake, all of it. So I love Bravo so much. And after I left Watch What Happens Live, where I was, you know, for work watching a lot of Bravo shows, I kept many of my faves and I became a huge fan. So like I still, you know, live for Vanderpump. I am obsessed with The Real Housewives of Beverly Hills. I was, emphasis on was, obsessed with The Real Housewives of New York City, which we can talk about that a little bit too. Salt Lake City, amazing. That was after my time there, but like, brilliant programming. Atlanta, Potomac, oh my gosh. Like, I believe I was working at Watch What Happens Live when Potomac premiered, and that was so exciting for me for so many reasons. So I kept a lot of my favorite shows. So that's a little bit about me. So you have, I'm a host on Radio Andy. I worked at Watch What Happens Live, and I've also moderated with my sisters at BravoCon. And so I have a lot of Bravo love, affinity, affection, and experience, both, you know, just as a viewer, but also in some behind the scenes moments. So I hope that you feel that you're in good hands with me, because this is my favorite topic. I am excited. So here's what I want to talk to you about today. I am a millennial. And I say that kind of proudly, because I always tell people, my fellow millennials, we must rejoice and take as much advantage of this moment that we are in right now, because since millennials, I can't remember what the years are, looked them up, forgot them, are like, you know, late 20s, early 30s to early 40s. We are the people in this moment being marketed to. Everyone wants our money because they're like, we know you have a job. We know you probably maybe have a kid or about to have one. And we know that you have money to spend, millennials. So we are catering to you. That is why we had the Mean Girls movie come out. That is why the Wicked movie is going over like gangbusters. Millennials, we are eating so good. So like, we are so powerful in this moment, and I'm loving every second. I love being a millennial. I love it. I love it. I love it. I love that I'm a millennial like Rihanna. I love that I'm a millennial like Keke Palmer. Like, I love that I'm a millennial like Britney Spears. She's a millennial, right? Yeah, she is. She was born 81, I think. I love it. And that's not to say that millennials, we don't have our flaws. We do. We could probably tone down the pumpkin spice. We are the people responsible for naming all of the child population Jaden, Kaden, or Aiden. And that is on us. We have a lot of flaws. We do. But the reason I'm bringing up millennials is because nothing fascinates me more. Perhaps maybe the amount of kids that Real Housewives tend to have, like, it's always just like, I love that a lot of them just have one daughter in New York City. I'm obsessed with that. But the thing that fascinates me the most in this current era of Housewives is I love what happens when a millennial joins the cast of Housewives. And it's really an interesting and fun dynamic to watch, because if you think about it, normally it's always a millennial joining an established cast. The reason for that is the OGs have been around for a while. At the time that Housewives started, millennials weren't in the age bracket or financial bracket or social bracket to feel like they belonged on Housewives. That's why, you know, that they were more of the kids, like the Summer Houses, the Vanderpump Rules. Now, in the modern era, we do have OG millennial Housewives, like, you know, mostly in Potomac with like Ashley Darby and people like that. I actually think, honestly, except for maybe some of the women in Dallas, and of course, New Roni with Uba, Brynn, and Aaron, but generally, and Whitney Rose in Salt Lake City. I'm looking at my list here, but like, until this modern era of Housewives, we did not have millennial OG Housewives. There were no millennial OG Housewives in Beverly Hills, none in OC, none in original New York, none in Atlanta, and none in New Jersey, I don't think. Again, don't quote me on this, but I would say on the whole. So what does that mean? That means that like, every Housewives franchise has its own culture. Like, Beverly Hills has its culture. New York City has its culture. They have a culture of that show. And I would say a big part of the culture on Housewives and in Housewives franchises has historically been a culture oriented around their Gen X age bracket. And I love Gen Xers. So this is not to be ageist in any way, but this is just showing that like they have the women on the show developed their communication style and the culture of their Housewives franchise together. And because they have that shared age cultural touch point, that is a big part of how they developed their communication style for better or worse. Millennials, and I did look this up, have a different communication style. We, with love, like to complain. That's the the reputation that we have, that we're pretty much a squeaky wheel. We are very direct and honest, and we like to get an answer, and we like to see a problem resolved in a real way, okay? Gen Xers, by design, are a tougher, walk it off, get over it, independent generation. That's a generalization that I got from the internet, okay? But it's true. Think about it. Like, think about the way that maybe you might speak, if you're a millennial, to like your mom or your aunt or an older cousin. Generally, that communication style is going to be different. Like, do you have Gen X friends? Like I do, that call me on the phone and I'm like, why are you calling me? Send me a text or send me a voice memo. Don't call ever. But it's because they don't have a relationship with texting the way that I have a relationship with texting. Neither is good or bad. It's just different. So I say all that to say, because millennials joining the cast, especially because usually they're joining as one-off singleton millennials in a cast full of women in another age bracket, they are very disruptive. I have a list in front of me of women on Housewives that I refer to, and I think you would agree, as the disruptors. Who's on that list? Monica Garcia, Queen Disruptor. That's a disruptor right there, okay? You know that. Megan King Edmonds, an OC. Disruptor, detective, full-on disruptor. Another queen disruptor, Ebony K. Williams in New York. You want to talk about a disruption? Look no further. Another disruptor. This is the person that honestly made me realize this epiphany that I've had that I'm talking to you about right now. And that is my queen, Crystal Kung Minkoff in Beverly Hills. The way that she came in shaking tables simply by holding the women accountable, she rattled them. She rattled Sutton in her first season of Beverly Hills. And I think, large in part, it's because she's a millennial. Another newbie disruptor, Bronwyn Newport in Real Housewives of Salt Lake City. I mean, the way that she's like, let's talk about it. The way that she approaches her communication style is so super millennial. And I want to give you some examples of all those disruptors. So since we're talking about Bronwyn, let's talk about her first. First of all, style queen, love her. I am very, very obsessed with Bronwyn. And I have to admit, just sidebar, like when Housewives started to be my same age on Housewives, I was a bit disturbed by that. I was like, no, Real Housewives aren't my age. The people my age are on the kids shows. The people my age are on Vanderpump. The people my age are on Summer and Winter House. The people who are my age are not holding a diamond or a peach or a champagne glass or a snowflake or in New Jersey, nothing. Why is this happening to me? I'm over that now. Now I am carrying a torch and a flag for my millennial sistren on Housewives. So back to Bronwyn. She has been a longtime friend of Lisa Barlow. Now, I also think something key is at play with Bronwyn on Housewives. I think this happens quite a bit when people who are friends with Real Housewives in real life join the cast, and then they join and they're like, why are you acting like this? Why is my friend acting this way? And it's like, oh, you know that person as your friend. You don't know that person as your friend on Housewives. We also saw this same dynamic happen with, I believe his name is Zach and Kristen on The Valley season one. Zach imploded when he was like, Kristen, why did you tell them what I said? Because he's not used to Kristen saying those things. But it's like, baby, that's not your friend, Kristen. That's not your friend, your off-camera friend, Kristen. That's now this is your TV friend, Kristen, and she's going to say stuff. Same, I think Bronwyn was really rattled by the way that Lisa Barlow treated her on camera because they have had this lovely friendship that they've enjoyed for years and years. That is a total rite of passage, I feel like, for new people on Bravo who join knowing someone IRL, and then the cameras start going and they're like, ah, my friend at work is really intense. That is happening. But what I also think is happening is that Bronwyn, from the first episode, she was like, I would like to raise an issue. I want a response, and not just any response. I want a response that I find to be accompanied by sincerity and changed behavior. And only then, when I get those things, will we be able to call the issue closed. Now, typically on Housewives, because of the culture of walk it off Gen Xers, that normally does not happen. When you have a conflict, you either you talk about it, and no matter how you feel at the end of the conversation, it's over. It's done. But with Bronwyn, she's like, no, 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 we're going to talk about it. Another example of how Bronwyn's millennialness is so disturbing to the Housewives. In that episode where they went to Palm Springs and Bronwyn and Todd invited everyone except for Heather Gay and Brittany on her anniversary trip, and Lisa Barlow, who is close with Heather Gay, called Heather from the hot tub on this free trip when Bronwyn was in the bathroom. Bronwyn came back and she was pissed. And I can see, as a millennial, why she would be pissed. And I can see why she would be irritated that someone called a person that she did not want on that trip the second she walked away. But I can also see from Lisa and Heather's perspective why they don't and they never will understand why Bronwyn was so offended. And Bronwyn will never understand why Lisa and Heather don't understand why what they did was offensive. Here's why. Bronwyn is a millennial. When a millennial gets or makes a phone call, it is quite a big deal. Quite a big deal. A phone call is like basically proposing marriage to someone. Like, it's not something that we do lightly. It's like great news or bad news. Otherwise, we're not really on the phone like that. Lisa and Heather, to them, it was just like what I would consider like a text, like sending a picture from the pool, being like, hey, miss you. They, because of the generational difference of how we use the phone, that caused a massive, massive argument and created an impasse in their friendship. And I believe that at its core, not entirely, but at its core, it is because of a fundamental difference in how millennials choose to communicate. And when millennials enter Housewives franchises, they shake, rattle, and roll. And this is one such example. Another example, Crystal Kung Minkoff. Out the gate, when she and Sutton had that argument about something that Crystal said, she said that Sutton said, I don't see color, and she found that offensive. Gen Xers, again, thank you, internet, are more like, you know, get over it. Like, we're tough. Like, everything I say doesn't have to be perfect, right? Millennials, we're like, everything you do say, we're sensitive, and we want things to be right. So Crystal was like, what did you mean when you said you don't see color? That was something that, were she not a millennial, I don't think it would have been brought up. I really don't think it would have been brought up. And that leads me to my next example, Ebony K. Williams. Now, Andy's girls, Andy's friends, all y'all, Andy's sisters, cousins, all y'all, I know that Ebony joining the Real Housewives of New York City is a very complex and layered issue. A lot went wrong. I am a Black woman. I know that entering that ecosystem and that cast where Ebony was introducing new concepts, and it's not that the women were like anti them, they were just such foreign concepts to them that it turned their world upside down. Okay. That was the key issue. However, I think because of Ebony's millennial communication style, it was especially disruptive. Because think of it this way. Do you think that if another Black woman had, like Ruby Bridges, integrated the Real Housewives of New York City, but she wasn't a millennial, that it would have gone the same way? Think about this. If Gisele Bryant joined the Housewives cast of New York City, would they have had the same issues? If Cynthia Bailey joined the cast of the Real Housewives of New York City, would they have had the same issues? If Garcelle Beauvais had joined the Real Housewives of New York City, would they have had the same issues? Now, I do believe that all three of those women would have invited the women of Real Housewives of New York City to confront their biases and their privilege and have difficult conversations. But I think they would have done it in a slightly different way because they would have been talking peer to peer. And I think Ebony's millennial energy is actually what created the biggest disruption. You feeling me? Am I crazy? I am, but I think I'm right.
I never knew you could treat depression symptoms from your phone. But with this prescription app called Rejoin, it's possible. It's for adults age 22 and up with major depressive disorder who want to add to their antidepressant medication. And get this, it's the first and only prescription app authorized by the FDA to treat depression symptoms. Rejoin does not replace your current medication. Be sure to use as directed by your healthcare provider. And if your depression symptoms worsen, seek help immediately. Get started today by talking to your healthcare provider or visiting meetrejoin.com. That's meetrejoin.com. Are you feeling overwhelmed by hormonal changes? In the words of an unnamed former OG New York housewife, we support other women. There are more than 1,000 hormone disruptors living rent-free in our environment right now. In our food, our water, the air we breathe, the clothes we wear, our skincare, and they all mess with our hormones. Then there's the natural hormone changes our bodies go through. Perimenopause, menopause. And while it's a natural process, it doesn't mean we don't suffer through it. In the time before that time of the month, I don't feel like myself. I recognize a change in emotion after the fact, but during it, it's so difficult to understand what is different about the experience of being me that changes in a matter of days. The good news is we don't have to suffer through any of it anymore, because now we have Hormone Harmony, a formula made only with herbal ingredients that are shown to reduce hormonal symptoms in women of all ages. Hormone Harmony is not just a hormone-supporting supplement. It's become a phenomenon. Women cannot stop talking about it on social media. A bottle of Hormone Harmony is sold every 24 seconds. And the biggest benefit, feeling like myself again. That's what women mention over and over in their reviews. And there are over 30,000 reviews for Hormone Harmony. For a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code AndysGirls at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code AndysGirls for 15% off today.
Moving on, Megan King Edmonds, the detective. I don't think that anyone who was not extremely online, like a millennial tends to be, would get the reputation that Megan King Edmonds got in OC. I don't think, where I believe that all of the women in Orange County were concerned about what happened with Brooks lying about having cancer and wanting to get to the bottom of it. It was only the millennial that really dove deep there because we like our answers. We want things to be really just extremely settled. And I think, again, Megan King Edmonds' disruptive nature, why it was so destabilizing to the women, was because she was a millennial. Going back to Bronwyn, I can literally see sometimes in the other women's eyes when she's talking to them that they're like, why are you holding me accountable for this? Why are you doing this? It's because it's our way. I see, when I watch millennials interact with the housewives and when I watch millennial housewives interact with other housewives, I see myself having a conversation with some of my friends that are not my age peers. I see it so clearly. And I want to offer, before I get to Monica, Here's another example. Now, Kristen Takeman is not a millennial. I believe she was born in 1977, but she had millennial enough qualities to rub Kelly Ben Simone the wrong way on The Real Housewives Ultimate Girl Strip. Remember when Kelly was calling her the interviewer, I think she was, or she kept saying, like, is this for a podcast? Because Kristen had the audacity to have watched The Real Housewives at any point in her life or be familiar with things that had happened on the show. Kelly found that really strange because I think that the OG approach to Housewives, the non-millennial approach to Housewives, is to be less hung up on what the viewing audience thinks of you. And I think that is a great quality in a housewife. That's why Sonia Morgan, you will always be famous. Kathy Hilton, taking your tracks out at the surrealism party, you will always be famous. I believe that Housewives is built on the backs of people who show you their true selves with zero care for how you are going to receive it. That is why Ramona is an incredible housewife. That is why I would say even Phaedra is an incredible housewife. Now, I know you're going to be like, but Lauren, like, Phaedra likes to hide stuff. Like, I think about, you know, first of all, Phaedra's my queen. I'm obsessed with her. But I think about that scene between her and the other women in early days Atlanta where she was trying to obscure and fudge the numbers about her due date. Even in that moment where she was trying to hide her truth, she was showing us the truth of who she was. And that's why someone like Kathy Hilton, who like does not give an absolute rip about what people think about her, is brilliant on that show. And let me take a little bit of a detour here, if I may, because here's, I said I was going to talk about New Roni, and here's my key issue with New Roni. There are too many, and I love the women. I think they're beautiful. I think they're stylish. I think that it is a great cast. They did their big one with casting. I really think so. But I think the unavoidable hiccup with New Roni is that for the most part, the women on that show, with the exception of, let's say, Jenna, they are all aspiring. Like, they have something to lose. They're on that show to rise in our esteem. They're on that show to rise in the esteem of their peers. They are on that show to rise in the esteem of their social circle and the viewing public at large. The original New York City Housewives, they were, to quote Jessel, they were not up and coming like Jessel thinks Tribeca is. They already had upped and had come. So for them, they were able to do things, say things, experience things, have a freedom on camera in a way that was not beholden to what other people might think. And back to my original point about age, millennials care more about our likes, our comments, our retweets, our impressions, our social impressions, like all of that stuff. And that's why you find that New Roni isn't going the distance, because those women are very, you know, as I am too, you know, they are very concerned with how they're going to come across on the show. That's why we're then relying on pranks about reputation and is this person pregnant outside of their marriage or not or whatever. Because at the end of the day, the women are still just that 10% too concerned with how they're coming across to really show us all of the fullness of themselves. Like, I want to see Sonia washing underwear in her bidet because she doesn't give a rip, you guys. She doesn't give a rip. And that's what makes her a great housewife. I would argue that similarly, housewives that are so wealthy that nothing can take away their social status, a la Kathy Hilton, again, that's someone where it's like, I don't care. This is a hobby for me. I have nothing to lose or gain from being on the show. I'm doing it for the love of the game. New York City, the love of the game is the secondary objective. Anyway, back to my point about how Kristen rubbed Kelly the wrong way, because Kristen was just like bringing up the idea that there were people that watched the show. All she did was bring up the concept that the show had been recorded and disseminated into the world. And Kelly didn't like that. But that whole, like, you know, let's be aware of how we're coming across here, I feel like is a very millennial quality. Now, let's talk about Monica, because she is also a millennial and she is a disruptor. And you know what? Okay, this just occurred to me. Now go with me here. The women of Salt Lake City have every absolute right to be freaked the heck out by Monica joining their group, having been reality Vontees, and not saying anything. And they have the right to be absolutely disturbed by everything that happened. But I do think, now that I'm sitting with it, that the scale of offense of reality Vontees is different generationally. I'll explain. For Monica, this was like a funny burner account. Who among us doesn't have a Finsta? You know what I'm saying? I mean, I don't, but I did. And who among us doesn't have like a backup account? Like back when people, when I was on Twitter and people would be like, oh, I have like three accounts because I don't want to end up in Twitter jail. Not that big of a deal, right? Like it's kind of routine. It's accepted and it's expected. Now, the things that she was posting on there, again, I think she was having a little hee-hee, ha-ha, tee-hee-hee, silly goofy mood moment. It was meant to be a little bit more malicious than that, but I do think that that's probably how it started. For the other housewives who don't have the same relationship to the internet and to Instagram, an account, even if it was not verified, didn't have a lot of followers. I had never heard of it. And I'm like pretty like, you know, plugged in like Bravo wise online. That's not something I saw. It wasn't something that was largely circulated to the general public or the fandom. But for the women to know that anything was on the internet that was negative about them, it was so disturbing to them. And I'm not saying that it's not a disturbing thing to do. Please let me be clear when I say that. I'm not saying that. But do you see what I'm saying about how for them, an Instagram takedown, quote unquote, page is like devastating. But for a millennial, it's like, LOL, I'm going to report this as like hate speech and move about my day. Like, it's not ruining my life. It's just simply not ruining my life. Like, but for them, it was a very big deal. And I think that was a millennial versus Gen X communication clash. I really, really do. I'm not trying to diminish the women's feelings. They obviously had every right to not trust her, especially after like she hid that from them and stuff. But I kind of feel like, you know, it's sort of like when my sometimes my mom will be like, I'll get like a spam email or something and I'll send like a screenshot of it to like my family group chat and be like, LOL, because maybe it's written funny or like the email is spelled a weird way or whatever. And my mom, like everyone else, like my sisters, my wife, they'll be like, ha ha ha, that's so funny. And then my mom will respond, call the FBI. She wants to call the Federal Bureau of Investigation over a spam text message. And that is the cultural difference, because my relationship to the internet and the phone is different than my mom. So for me, it's a ha 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 ha. And for her, it's a call the FBI. I. You feel me? That's why I think that millennials are so destabilizing, because they come in into an established culture and communication style that is largely reliant upon Gen X sensibilities. And they're like, oh, we're going to talk about it. Like, we're not going to talk behind each other's backs. We're not going to, you know, say things are okay when they're not. We're going to be like a dog with a bone. And again, that's my quality. Like, if we have beef, I'm not going to stop until we have truly settled it, not had a conversation and acknowledge that we've had beef, but we're going to cut the beef open, put it on several serving plates, and cut it up and process it until it is completely deaded. Okay. Also, we have a key clash, I think, with millennials and Gen X housewives, because like they just have different lived experiences. If you think about it, the I'm thinking about like some of the housewives who've been married for like 30 years. versus the ones that have been married for 10 or 15. So when these women are sitting next to each other and their lens through which they see the world is so different, because when they got married, the idea of marriage was different for a woman who's Gen X than it was for a woman who's a millennial. The idea of how you raise your kids is different. It was different at the time that a Gen X person would become a parent rather than when a millennial became a parent. The idea of like how you earn your money, save your money, spend your money, all of those things are so different. So they're coming at these things from such vastly different POVs that it's fascinating to watch, because I really think that Heather Gay does not like Bronwyn because she didn't understand why Bronwyn would invite her to her house to have a difficult conversation. That was offensive to her. But to Bronwyn, that was charitable. That is a key generational cultural difference. It's simple. I also think that another good example of this, even though I would say that, you know, Salt Lake City is in the modern era, so it's not as exactly a one-to-one, but like Whitney Rose, the way that she does not let things go, especially with Lisa, like, why did you lie? That whole argument that has been going on in Salt Lake City this whole season between Lisa and Whitney. Lisa got so mad when Whitney said, oh, you spread this rumor about Alibaba. When Lisa said, no, I didn't, from her perspective, the conversation was OVER. When Whitney was like, okay, but maybe you did, or when Whitney even pursuing the line of conversation further, one, that was a very millennial thing to do because Whitney was not satisfied with the conversation. But from Lisa's perspective, she was like, we got to walk this one off. I said I didn't do it. Move on. That's a Gen X perspective. The millennial perspective was like, I know you said you didn't do it, but can you prove to me that you didn't do it? And can you apologize to me and explain to me that you didn't do it? Lisa was like, I said I didn't do it. Let's move on. Key communication style difference. Whitney Rose is possibly the most millennial of us all on Housewives because she will hold on to something. I mean, grip it so hard, not to be confused with her loose grip on that birthday cake that she dropped a couple seasons ago, but she will hold on to things. And I think that while that's probably a lot of just like who she is as a person, I think it's also a very millennial quality. Now, let's talk about Potomac, because Potomac, modern era Housewives, I feel like right now, I haven't fully done the math, but I do believe we're at a tipping point where Potomac has more millennials in the cast than anything, because we have Mia, Ashley Darby, Candace is no longer on it, but when she was on it, Wendy is a millennial and Kiarna is a millennial, and Jacqueline, who's a friend of, she's also a millennial. So that is outnumbering Giselle, Karen, and I believe is Stacey a millennial? Let's look this up. Typing. Stacey Rush. When was she born? Let's see. Birth date. She's done a good job of scrubbing this. I got to say, Stacey Rush age. Let's. I cannot find this person's information. Is she Heather Gay? I don't know how old she is. Honestly, go off. That's leading me to think she's not a millennial. Because I'll say it right now, I'm 39. Don't repeat that. Just kidding, you can't. Every birthday is a blessing. But anyway, back to my point. I do feel like Potomac has a real, a different vibe to it because so many of the women are millennials. That's why you have, I mean, when you talk about like, the way that they communicate, which is like a lot of texting versus like you'll see way more FaceTiming in Beverly Hills and phone calls in Beverly Hills. You'll see more texting on Potomac, bringing out the Bluetooth speaker. Who do you know that would bring out a Bluetooth speaker more than a millennial? I'll wait, because we love to pair to device. Okay. We love to do searching for a device to pair with. That is a very millennial quality. And some of the hijinks, even like, and the way that the women respond to Mia and respond to Mia and Jacqueline's friendship, Mia and Jacqueline, like, for example, like sharing a bathroom or them being like, oh, I saw them like in the shower together. Now, there's a lot going on there. Let me be clear. I'm not being obtuse. There's a lot going on there with Mia and Jacqueline. But the women's reaction doesn't match the crime. because the reaction is coming from a different cultural place. It just simply is. So all this is to say that I love the millennial appetite for accountability. I love truly looking at the eyes bugging out of their castmates when they're like, why won't you let this go? And I think they're at this point a very vital part of the recipe of Housewives. I think that the generational differences, it's really, it creates a new type of friction, and it creates a different flavor and texture to the conversations that's really needed. And speaking of texture and flavor of conversations, I was really struck recently by a recent episode of The Real Housewives of Salt Lake City, because actually the last two, I would say, one of the ones when they were finishing up the Palm Springs trip, when everyone was kind of going around the table and like kind of resolving their issues, they were like, okay, yes, now we are good, like checking things off. I really, really love this season how Salt Lake City is doing such a good job, because, you know, like sometimes you have those really awful, laborious, long seasons of Real Housewives where, for example, something like Pantygate just like takes up the whole season. Like it never gets resolved. Everyone's so upset. We keep coming back to it. Salt Lake City women, they are so perfect because they get very riled up. They have their stuff happen, they hash it out, and then they're able to move on to the next thing. And that is why I like to watch Housewives, because I like to see all the different ways in which that they are able to address conflict. And so I think that I feel like the rhythm and the texture of the conversations on that show this season have been so great, because it has such great peaks and valleys. It's not plateauing. And I wasn't going to talk about this, but I want to. Something and someone else that has my heart, my spirit, my soul. She is mother, to quote Candy, that's my mama. That's my mama. That is Angie MFing Katsanivas. I have been obsessed with Angie K since day dot, okay? Angie K, I feel like we need a book purely on Angie K's ascent from guest and friend of to center snowflake. No one could have predicted that, and no one could have seen it coming. But Angie K, if you really look at it, we should have all seen it coming. For this woman to go from being not even the only Angie on the show, she is back to being the only Angie on the show, and she is still Angie K. Even though there's no more Angie H on the show, she had to start her tenure on the show with a last initial. That is as low on the social cachet as a housewife you can get. That is as dismissive as it can get for someone. And this woman is such a brilliant housewife. She hits all the marks. She has the well-established employment situation. The fact that she and her husband own and have the hair salons, brilliant. They have the money. They have a beautiful home. You have her real celebration of her culture and her Greek heritage, which is like really heartfelt and interesting, and it provides a different and interesting perspective, and I get to learn something and see things that I don't normally see. I love the way that she talks like she's on Shark Tank. I love that she always sounds like she's giving a presentation over Zoom, where she's like, I just love it so much. I'm obsessed with her cadence. Obsessed, obsessed, obsessed. And I also love that like she started out as not iconic. Like she was like so deeply not iconic that she ran it around to being iconic. And she cares the exact right amount about what people think, which is not very much, but a little. Like she doesn't care that much because she's going to stand up for herself, but she also has a little wink to the audience, whether it's on Instagram or like in the season premiere with the scroll. Like she is at the exact level of whimsy. She kind of has the same whimsy of like a midpoint Real Housewives of Atlanta cast, like a Portia. Like, she's fun. She's also, I can tell, just a good person, like a sweet soul. I just love that she literally went from like, who is Angie in the eyes of Mary Cosby, to holding the center stone. Like, because guess what? She also will get buck with you if you want to come after her family. She is not afraid to argue with Meredith or Lisa or Heather. She is not afraid. She will kick that chair back in a second. But she's also like a good mom and like opened up about like her worries and like her talking about her own childhood and her mother and her relationship with her dad. She just is someone where it's like, she is an example of like, what is meant for you will be for you, and just do your work and like be who you are and good will come to you. I am a Stangie. I am a Stangie for life. I think she is just truly archetypical at this point. Like, I think that she is blueprint territory for Housewives. Angie fucking K. I love her. Also, like, I just, oh my God, like Barbie scissor kicks. Like, I'm just thinking, like, she wasn't afraid to try to out Jen Shah. What? She also has the great, great, great distinction of being like very proper and polite and like a, you know, a raised well young woman, but also will do something like that. She contains multitudes. I love her. I love Angie K. I love Angie K so much. She is my favorite housewife, I believe, in the modern era. Let me not say all that because I'm going to think back to this and be like, well, why did you say that? Because there's so many other ones. Like, I love Luann. Love Luann. We'll always love Luann. Love Sonia, love Kenya, love Portia. Let me stop. Let me stop. Anyway, I would love to know what you think about the presence of millennials on Housewives. Some people don't like it. Some people have said that millennials are too self-aware or too, I hate this word, woke, or too whatever, to be on Housewives because we like our Housewives to be a little bit more candid and a little bit more unafraid to offend and unapologetic. And I feel like millennials are unapologetically apologetic, speaking from my own perspective. But I know that there's a big contingency of people that think that millennials don't belong on Housewives. They might be ruining it. It's just, you know, changing it. But I do think that we, my millennial sistren, are changing Housewives for the better. Now, I don't think we need to have full millennial Housewife casts. I think we need age diversity in the same way we need diversity of all types on Housewives. But I love to see it. I love to see them shaking the tables. I love to see them bring out their healing journeys and take people along on it, because some of these women don't want to be on a healing journey. But guess what? If there's a millennial involved, you're at least going to come on a leg of it. And I love that for them. So let me know what you think. Tell me, am I off base here? Are you a millennial? Like, do you like seeing millennials on Housewives? Do you not? Hit me up on Instagram at MSLAS. You can also follow at Smith Sisters Live on Instagram. That's me and my sister's Instagram page. We post a lot of fun reels about pop culture topics, usually a lot of Bravo. And you can hear us every weekday morning at 9 a.m. Eastern, 6 a.m. Pacific on Smith Sisters Live at on Radio Andy, Sirius at XM Channel 102. And also, I don't know if I'm talking out of school here, but I'm going to break some news to you. Our show is going to become a podcast also. So you can find us on the podcast app. It's going to be called Smith Sisters Live Deep Dive. We're going to drop some interviews and some deep dives in our episodes. So you can catch us there anywhere you get your podcast. Thank you for spending this time with me, Andy's girls. Thank you for inviting me into your home and into your ears. It has been my absolute pleasure. And I hope to see you again soon. Bye.
Thank yous so much to Lauren. I will never stop saying thank yous. Thank yous and ingredients are two of the greatest gifts that Teresa Giudice has brought to our world. And I can't thank her enough. So thank yous to Lauren for today's episode, which was a delightful, delightful ride. Make sure to follow Lauren at MSLAS on Instagram, and make sure to subscribe to the pod she just announced, Smith Sisters Live Deep Dive, a brand new podcast premiering on December 9th. Make sure to send her some love on the Instagram graphic for this episode. Thank her for being such an incredible friend and Bravoholic and the first ever guest host of an AG episode. And we're 600 plus episodes in. So that's pretty fucking cool. Thanks to all of you for your kindness and kind words. I'm not going to cry. I'm not crying. Crying is not happening. I did that multiple times today. I just want to say thank you so much for all of your kindness and support. And also just want to let you know, recording this Friday night, that I did just watch the most recent two episodes of Salt Lake City. So I'm bringing my recording equipment with me to Rhode Island for my father's fake Shiva. And I may be recording an episode. We're going to see how the energy is. I sometimes think I have more capacity than I end up having, but we're just going to play this by ear. But in the meantime, thank you for your support. I hope you enjoy this fun, exciting series. And thanks again to Lauren for being the best. All right, guys, take care of yourselves, and I will chat with you soon. Bye-bye.
That's the average number of apps used by many companies. This leads to a lot of context switching that can distract employees and costs your company. Luckily, Grammarly can help. Grammarly's AI works in over 500,000 apps and websites, making it easy for your team to crank out clear, on-brand emails, documents, messages, and more. In just one click, they can go from blank page to first draft, all without leaving the page they're on. Grammarly has 15 years of experience building effective, secure AI that can be implemented in days with minimal IT overhead. It goes beyond basic grammar to help tailor writing to specific audiences, whether that means adding an executive summary, fine-tuning tone, or cutting out jargon. Join 70,000 teams who save an average of $5,000 per employee per year using Grammarly. Go to grammarly.com/enterprise to learn more. Grammarly. Enterprise-ready AI.